Welcome back into the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This is our national edition. Wherever you're watching, wherever you're listening, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. We're glad you're aboard. Got Ian McIntyre, does a terrific job covering the Vancouver Canucks. Sportsnet.ca to join us in a few minutes. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, and Disco Dan Franceschi in for the Sammy McKee. And he is knocking it out of the park right now. Just to give you some ideas how Disco has taken Sammy's job basically away from him. I don't know any other way to describe it, JB.
Yeah.
So, like, just to give you an idea of how much Disco's stepped up the game, this is his lineup right here, okay? And it is like 6 pages deep, and it's on both sides, and it basically could be the whole show in itself. I could leave the next hour, and you'd be fine just reading this.
Just read this, and it would be a thorough show.
So this is like a lineup from like Harvard.
Dude, this is a university report right here on last night.
And
in
let
the
me
NHL.
Just, I got a Sammy lineup to compare it to.
Yeah, you brought that one. That was one of his better ones, actually.
Yeah, this one, let me just unfold this Tim Hortons napkin. And there's Sammy's. For those of you that can't see the monitor right now, it just basically says, say hello at 4 p.m. We have two guests and say goodbye at 5:57 Eastern.
Did he spell bye correctly?
No.
It was the U.
He's got one spelling mistake guaranteed every night.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough day for Sam because it's not like he lost his job, but his job description has changed now because he can't go back.
Oh, I feel bad.
We will never go back.
I didn't intend to do that, guys. That was not my intention for Sammy.
We had 10 questions for Ian McIntyre.
We expect a lineup like this every day now.
You want to know some stuff with the Canucks?
Yeah.
I'll tell you all kinds of things.
Yeah. Did you go home last night or did you just work on this all night?
No, I did. I have been known to do those things, though, Kipper. I could tell.
Really?
Yeah, I could tell.
Another.
When I was in the morning, Kipper, it was a different story. That's a different world out there.
Well, Sammy's going to have to get in here just a little earlier now.
Yeah.
It's all good, though. It's all good. We're glad you're aboard. We're forever grateful for our Sammy.
The Canucks are the NHL's first team to reach 30 wins this season.
Mm-hmm.
They're 7-1-1 to kick off 2024.
Not the big story today.
No.
Jimmy Rutherford, contract extension, agreed to terms on a 3-year deal.
But I got a page on that too.
Oh, yeah. it is remarkable the turnaround from last season where, Rome was burning.
It was chaos. It was chaos. You know, Bruce Boudreau's situation was interesting, right, in the news. And Rutherford spoke quite a bit last year in the media, often being critical of his head coach. They had let Rachel Dorigo at the start of the season. They had hired new assistant general managers. They had, talked about the Miller contract was going to be should we trade this guy? Are we rebuilding? It was mayhem. And here we are, and they're in the President's Trophy hunt.
I do have a point on this, actually, something I thought about. You know, we watched the Calgary Flames yesterday.
Yeah.
If you're a Flames fan, you'd probably point at Vancouver and say, see, it's doable.
100%.
But the problem is, I think they're vastly different scenarios. Like, I think Vancouver was in a position where they felt like they had the horses to do it, and it just wasn't happening for whatever reason. Insert new coach, changes, boom, it happens, team's playing well. Even on balance, since Jim Rutherford came into power there, they had the bad year last year. But prior to that, he comes in midway through 2021, that season, going into 2022, and they were a 30-15 team. They were not that bad. So you could see it. My thing would be, if you're a Calgary fan, you got to probably try and be as logical and as rational as you can be right now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's welcome in Ian McIntyre, Canucks columnist, Sportsnet.ca, does a terrific job on the broadcast. Ian, thanks for joining us. And I don't know if you caught all of us just describing at least trying to describe the turnaround in such a short period of time. Like, outside of your daily activities following this team, like, for the people out west in Vancouver, has it totally sunk in, like, this remarkable turnaround?
I actually don't think it has. Yeah. Listening to Rutherford's press conference this morning, of course, Francesco Aquilini, the managing owner, was there as well. And we don't often hear from Aquilini. But when Aquilini talked about the team being first overall, five players and the coach going to the All-Star game in Toronto, and he said, as far as he knows, 1989 Oilers were the last team that had that. And whether that's true or not, it's exciting and it's fun to be a Canucks fan again. He was marveling as he said it. This is the owner of the team who still sounded in semi-disbelief. Everybody is enjoying this an awful lot. I can tell you that, because there has been enormous frustration and dejection about the state of this franchise until recently. It's amazing. I went back and looked, because this is what, January 19th. Mm. It was January 16th of last year, only 368 days ago, that Rutherford had a press conference where it looked like the team was in utter ruin. The brand was at its nadir, certainly this century. And it just seemed like the work ahead was impossible. And 12 months later, here we are, the team's in first place in the league. And Jim Rutherford's got a 3-year extension to continue running this team till he's 77. It's amazing what's happened here the last 12 months.
So what are the pivotal markers, the pivotal moments to take us from 368 days ago to going, I don't know, they might be in the President's Trophy. We talked yesterday about Canucks or Oilers, who you got in a series. It's like, I don't know, how do you pick against Demko versus Skinner? So how did we get here?
Well, 362 days ago, right after that press conference, or soon after, Jim Rutherford fired Bruce Boudreau and he brought in Rick Tocchet. And it's the first time in a long time where there had been complete alignment from top to bottom in the organization. And Tocchet has just done an amazing job. I mean, there's, you know, at that press conference that I referenced by Rutherford last January, he talked about major surgery. And people wonder, well, where was the major surgery? There were some major decisions. Obviously, the coach was a big decision. They traded Bo Horvat, their captain, which led them to do other things. They brought on Philip Roenick on defense, and then they bought out Oliver Ekman-Larsson, for which Aquilini agreed to pay $19 million for him not to play for the Vancouver Canucks. But that buyout allowed them to bring in other players in the summer, Carson Soucy and Ian Cole, who have been terrific on defense, Teddy Bluger, Pugh Suter, to give them strength down the middle. And of course, they made the Zadorov trade at the end of November. So there has been a lot that has happened. But I think at its core, at the epicenter of all this, is Rick Tocchet and bringing in a system of accountability that had not existed previously. And it's worked because the core players that he inherited have all embraced these new standards and embrace the idea that nothing that they do as an individual is as important as the team winning. And you're seeing, you know, another incredible year from Elias Pettersson. You're seeing an unprecedented year, at least for this franchise, in a defenseman in Quinn Hughes. Thatcher Demko's having a year that has him in the Vezina Trophy conversation halfway through. Rick Tocchet. It's either Rick Tocchet or John Tortorella as coach of the year at this point. And, you know, Brock Besser's had a tremendous bounce back year. And JT Miller. JT Miller, who maybe symbolized, at least on the ice, a lot of the dysfunction that the team was going through. JT Miller having an incredible year as a two-way matchup center. It's getting all these core players to buy in, and they've set a new standard here. And it's a standard, I can tell you, because I've covered the team a long time, it's a standard that hasn't existed, certainly since the Sedins retired, but possibly even slightly before then, because the team was on decline the last couple of years that the Sedins played. But there is a standard that's very reminiscent of the great teams that the Sedins led to a couple of President's Trophies, went to the 2011 Stanley Cup Final. I'm not making those kind of bold predictions for this team, but there's a lot of similarity in the feeling of what's going on now with these Canucks and what happened then more than a decade ago with those Canucks.
We're talking to Ian McIntyre, Canucks broadcaster, columnist for Sportsnet.ca. Ian, nobody has followed this team closer on a day-to-day basis. And we do hear from coaches the term accountability, and everybody wants it, but not everybody can get it like Rick Tocchet or as fast as Rick Tocchet here. What have you seen that makes him successful while other coaches continue to struggle a little bit?
Well, I think he has proven through action that he's consistent in what he's preaching. And it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, Nils Höglander, who's near the bottom of the lineup or was at that time and got sat out, or Andre Kuzmenko, last year's 39 goal scorer, who's, you know, if there's a crisis, because there always seems to need to be one, if there's a crisis for the Canucks, it's what's going on with Andre Kuzmenko, who's been a healthy scratch five times. Or even if you go back to a spell in late November when the team, the only time they've scuffled it, and by scuffling, I mean they were winning one, losing one, which was a lot better than they did when they were scuffling the previous three seasons. But there was a period of time where Rick Tocchet was telling us in the media, you know, Petey's got to be better, and Petey knows he's got to be better. So he handled it in a different way. But every player, top to bottom of the lineup, is being held accountable. And because, again, the leadership group, and Quinn Hughes, as a young captain who's still kind of learning on the job, he's been tremendous in this as well, that that leadership group is taking that culture, taking that responsibility onto themselves. Tocchet has said a couple of times recently, he doesn't even need to tell the team this because they already know this. And that's another thing that's very reminiscent of when the Sedins were at their peak and this franchise was one of the best in the NHL over a period of about 6 years, is that it's the players setting the standard in the room. And you know, Kipper, all the great teams, I would even say every team that wins the Stanley Cup, you have to have the players who are setting the standard. It can't always be external. So where Tocchet has succeeded and others have failed is that he's been consistent with this standard, and he has somehow, in a very short period of time, going back to when he came in last January, established this trust with the top players where they're taking it on themselves. I also think those top players had all been here for a few years. They'd seen the tire fire. I think they were all embarrassed about how poorly the team had done because obviously they're good players and there were other good players around them. I think they were ready for Rick Tocchet. I think this is a perfect example of the right coach at the right time for this group.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned how there always has to be some sort of fire to put out. You know, after the Nylander contract got signed, you know, we started being like, ooh, Pettersson, you know, let's talk about him every single day. Why does it feel weird? It feels weird that this guy is someone who's been great. He's someone they want. He's someone they're willing to pay. He's an RFA, and it's not happening. What am I missing about what's going on there?
Well, you're not missing anything. It's a perfect summary of the situation. And it does feel weird. I mean, even Patrick Alvin, who I had a sit-down interview with on the Canucks' last road trip, admitted this is an unusual situation where you have an RFA, not a UFA, an RFA, who the team has some control over, and is eager to start negotiations and make him by far the highest paid player in franchise history. But Elias Pettersson has wanted to wait. And he made it very clear, you know, it was an interview with our Elliot Friedman back in August, where he made it clear that he wanted to wait so that he could focus entirely on having a successful season. And obviously, had there been any traction in negotiations last summer, maybe he wouldn't have waited. But things weren't going anywhere. So it's Elias Pettersson, the player, who has shut this down. I know his agents would love to get a deal done, you know, but right now it's Elias calling the shots. It is an unusual situation. Rutherford said again today, you know, pledged his devotion and love for Pettersson and how much he wants Pettersson to remain with this franchise. But for now, because he's an RFA and not a UFA, it's a profound difference. And one of the big differences, say, with Nylander and others, there's not that dire urgency yet with Pettersson to get a deal done. It's different than even, you know, last year with Bo Horvat as a Canucks captain who was going to be a UFA, and it became this constant kind of drag, among other things, on the team that they hadn't got a deal done. Of course, eventually Horvat was traded. It's different than that. But I'll say this. You can only wait as an organization to a point. And although it's accurate that the Canucks do have control, they can make a qualifying offer. I don't think anybody's signing an offer sheet for Pettersson. And if they do, the Canucks are going to match. But they want to know what's happening going forward. Alvin told me, you know, there's a pecking order of how they tackle contracts, and Pettersson, he didn't say this, but it's obvious Pettersson's at the top of the pecking order, and they need to know, you know, what he's going to cost and for how much longer in order for them to continue to build the team around him. They've got another really big RFA in Philip Roenick. They've got a pile of UFAs who have played really well in supporting roles for this team, that they would like to keep some of those as well. But it all gets back to how much is it going to cost for Pettersson. And if they get past this season, and Jim Rutherford alluded to this today as well, once it gets past the regular season, then things get a lot more serious. So if nothing happens this season, certainly between the end of the season and before qualifying offers go out ahead of free agency this summer, they need to know one way or another on Elias Pettersson.
It's an interesting thought in terms of, you know, the more we know on what the number is going to be, the more we can start planning now. So I ask you this, he's loved out there, but is there a chance if he drags this thing out a lot longer that, you know, there could be a shift of the way the fan base think of him?
I think there's already some discontentment in the fan base, but, you know, Canuck Nation, you guys are really familiar with Leafs Nation. Discontentment is never far away. It doesn't take much to provoke it, but certainly there are some people already who I think are frustrated that, you know, because, you know, as fans, you're not investing only your money, which is important to the team. It's that emotion that you invest, and you invest it in players more than individual players as much as anything. And so there's a lot of people who love Pettersson and obviously want him to stay, who are, I think, concerned, maybe more concerned than Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin are to this point about him not coming back. But again, one way or another, the Canucks are going to need to know before free agency. I wouldn't say it's impossible that, say, they end up offering a QO and that Pettersson plays next year on a one-year contract. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I'd say it's extremely unlikely, because once you get to that point, you know, the balance of power is all with the player. I think the Canucks will want to look at their options before then. If they actually feel like there's a realistic chance that Pettersson isn't going to be back, they don't want to leave that decision until next year's trade deadline. Mm-hmm. They want to look at that before free agency, before this summer, so that they're still operating at least from a little bit of strength.
Last one for me. And are you done on Pettersson?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, what the Canucks would do at deadline this year. What do you think they'll be looking at? Will they be aggressive? Or, I mean, this is, they haven't been buyers in a while here. This is exciting to go to the store now. What are they going to be shopping for?
Well, they've been quietly aggressive all along. If you look at some of the things that Alvin has done from last season, there's been so few trades this year, but if you run through the ticker, it seems like the Canucks are involved in half of them. And they've been able to get deals and good deals, you know, picking up Sam Lafferty right before the season, getting Casey DeSmith. I mentioned the Zadorov trade. They've made good moves along the way. There's no reason to think, based on that, that they wouldn't continue to be aggressive. But I would say, and this might be my single biggest takeaway from today's press conference, is that Jim Rutherford may as well have jumped up on the podium, grabbed a microphone and said, "Let's go," because that was his message. You know, his quote about there's a risk in making moves and adding players, but he said importantly, there's also a risk in not doing anything. And he said he's seen teams that he thought were really good, and then he's surprised that they do nothing to make themselves better. Having witnessed so many losing seasons here the last decade, I can tell you nobody is complacent now about the opportunity that the Canucks suddenly find themselves with. And it may be an opportunity that they didn't expect. It may be right now, maybe it's not sustainable. Maybe it's a different conversation 2 months from now. But right now, you know, they're looking at my notes, 30, 11, and 4. They've been, from start of the season until now, very consistently one of the best teams in this league. I think they're going to do everything they can to maximize this opportunity and see where it takes them this spring.
And Ian, right now, you can't argue that Jim Rutherford couldn't have picked a better time to sign an extension here. Three-time Stanley Cup champion, the turnaround, like if...
If
Jimmy went into Francesco and said, "I want to be the highest paid president," did Francesco argue much on that? Like, any idea how well he did?
Yeah, actually, I don't. And that's a good question. Who would be the highest paid president right now? Would it be Davidson or would it be Shanahan?
I got to think that Brendan Shanahan, the feeling is around $6 million U.S. in that ballpark.
Same. Yeah, Shanahan's had, I'm guessing, what, three contracts at least?
Sounds
with
right.
Toronto.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jim at age 74 and on a second deal, I suspect didn't do quite that well. But, you know, the bottom line is this guy's won three Stanley Cups. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. He doesn't need this job. And to me, I actually wondered when he took the job, and I believe he was 71 when he took it. He's 74 years old now. Whether it was just sort of one last thing that he wanted to do, and he would put a team in place. He would groom his successor in Patrick Alvin, certainly in terms of managing the hockey operations department, and then might happily step back and say, "Well, my work is done here." But clearly, he's still driven to win. He wants a fourth Stanley Cup. I don't think the money was probably the overriding factor, but I think he's probably done pretty well. It's one thing about, you know, the Aquilinis as owners, and there's been lots of criticism, some of it justified. They have never shied away from paying, whether it's, you know, players, they've almost always are paying to the salary cap limit or over, you know, with the various mechanisms that allow that, whether it's going out and getting Jim Rutherford. I'm sure he didn't come cheap to begin with, you know, to come out of retirement, move his family from Raleigh, North Carolina to Vancouver. I don't think that was an expensive proposition for the Canucks. So if the fact that Rutherford has achieved what he's achieved to this point, and really as good as the Canucks have been the last 12 months, it still feels like this is kind of the launch pad. Like this isn't the destination yet of where they're going because their core players are so young. They've got other moves to make. They may be able to get some cap flexibility yet. I don't think there was probably a really tough negotiation about what it was going to take to keep Jim Rutherford. He was their guy. Francesco Aquilini went out to get him. It's turned out to be the right choice. Almost everything that Rutherford has done, and certainly in the last year, everything this hockey ops department has done seems to have been the right choice. It's money well spent to keep him here.
Really appreciate your feedback on the Canucks and a big day in Vancouver, knowing who their general is for the next 3 years. Ian, enjoy the rest of the season, man. It's tell us what it's like to just cover a team that just keeps winning
all the time.
Let us know.
Well, it's a refreshing narrative just for a change of pace. Success, optimism, enthusiasm, all those things surrounding the team that have been foreign for the last 3 years.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, terrific stuff. Thank you. Ian McIntyre. You know, the other thing, I mean, we could talk to him the whole hour on the Canucks, but just the quick turnaround on the blue line. Of course, it's led by the elevated play by Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, but the Hronek trade helped get there.
Yeah.
And the pickup of Carson Soucy is no small deal. Yeah. I know he's been hurt. Zadorov helps.
Yeah, Zadorov, who's got his warts.
Yeah, he's a roller coaster.
Right? But the presence that he brings every night, like five guys on the ice know when he's on the ice.
Yeah.
Right?
Including his own teammates, because they're like, just double check he is where we want him to be.
The other name I want to drop is Adam Foote.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really talk about, we talk about Rick Tocchet. Everybody's heard Rick Tocchet. Nobody's talking about Adam Foote. And I think he should be, you should have that same conversation that you have with Coffey in Edmonton, calming these guys down. When you think about Adam Foote and where he's been and what he's seen and the experience that he's had with Team Canada's and Stanley Cup champions and playing with a guy like Ray Bourque. I mean, come on, let's talk more about Adam Foote on that bench as well.
Yeah, certainly worth his due. It is a huge part of their turnaround. Part of the reason it's easier to believe in what they're doing. Doesn't seem like a fluke when there's major changes and a good coach involved.
All right, Sammy, game time. Disco Dan.
Sorry,
it's an automatic on game time.
Yeah, it's game time.
It's game time.
Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only, play responsibly. All right, guys, we got four games on the slate today in the National Hockey League. Quieter night, tomorrow's Hockey Day in Canada, so we got a busy Saturday slate. For tonight, here's what I was looking at and what caught my eye earlier today. So the Panthers hosting the Minnesota Wild tonight. I don't see value on the money line. They're minus 200 favorites. You're probably not putting any juice. There's not enough juice there for value purposes. But I will go puck line, minus -1.5, plus +125 for the Florida Panthers at home against the Minnesota Wild. We've talked about, hey, this team just yesterday lost their captain, Jared Spurgeon, out for the year. He's having two surgeries, not one. He's going to have two. So I kind of like Florida to get it going, to take advantage of a depleted Minnesota team, pick up a win tonight on home ice. I was also keying in on the New Jersey Devils, and I know their season has been a lot of ebbs and flows, right? Peaks and valleys, ups and downs for this team, and they've been the model of inconsistency this year. But they're playing Columbus. So they're seventh in the Metro is New Jersey. The lone team below them is Columbus. You can get New Jersey at minus -160 on the money line if you want to get a little adventurous, plus +155 on the puck line. I also don't mind the over in that game as well, 6.5. I mean, geez, I think we could see some goals. If Columbus can score a little bit, then we got some offense there. And the last one that was interesting to me, you got the Islanders and the Blackhawks in the later game. That's a 8:30 p.m. puck drop tonight. I kind of like the over. Set at 6, I kind of like that over. I think the Islanders are kind of poised for a bit of an offensive breakout here. It's been a little quiet from them offensively as of late. Let's get some offense.
Sold on that. I like, I like New Jersey in particular against Columbus at some point here. New Jersey's going to start to win some hockey games. So
Feels that way.
Maybe a goalie will give them a save one night, too.
I don't know.
Like him, eh?
Well, Hamilton's out.
Yeah,
the talk is that he may come back in the last week, 10 days. But if they're in it, there's a push, if there's something there, there's a slight chance he can come back. If not, they'll write him off for this year. But You lose your horse. It's hard back there.
Yeah, you don't get saves. You don't have your number one D. Jack Hughes has not been playing a ton. I still think that Columbus team is in such disarray that I'll take him in one game. But
second night of a back-to-back for Columbus, and they just got shut out. So let's see. I mean.
Yeah, like that one.
Ripe for the picking.
All right. Take us out. I think you got to say it all again.
Yep. That was Game Time presented by Bet365. Again, visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary. Bet365 must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Play responsibly.
Well done, sir.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll tidy it all up with news and notes. Pinto in for the Ottawa Senators. Yes. We'll talk about that. What else have we got?
Do you want some text? Text us at 590-590? Oh,
absolutely.
Active text line.
Is it active?
Oh, there's a lot of, it's flooding.
And we need your rating and review over Disco Dan.
Just,
compared to our Sammy McKee.
You just need to know the quality and depth of his work is all I need to say. This document right here is something special.
All right. More Real Kipper after the break. And Bourne.
I don't care.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Disco Dan. I know we're going to get to texts, and I certainly am hoping, Daniele, that you can find a few that rip Sammy.
We've got a few, actually.
Just, so before we get to that, a couple of news and notes I want to get into. Pinto's coming back. He's just 22 years of age, coming off a very emotional suspension. Can he be any good at all? Like, when I think about guys that miss training camp and try to play in November, they have a tough time.
For sure.
How about this guy coming back after 41 games off?
I think the one thing he has going for him is that there's no expectations. Right? I mean, like,
well, he's an Ottawa Senator.
The team's in last by, I think, 12 points in the Atlantic. You know, they're way in last. He has missed half the season. Any help they can get will be welcome. He's making league minimum. I just think they're looking for him to show that he can be a contributor and a piece of the solution for them.
You got a thought?
Elliot had also mentioned that they're entertaining the idea of working on a long-term extension and that there had been talks surrounding that. So that's a consideration.
They just couldn't do it this year. They just had no space.
Yeah. Yeah, so and that was the issue even coming into the season when obviously being an RFA, they couldn't find the room, or we thought as to why he wasn't even going to be with the club initially. We learned obviously that he was suspended for the gambling, but 20 goal scorer a year ago in his first NHL season. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt to have that kind of guy into your lineup.
Yeah,
so seeing what he is at 22 years old, and you kind of go from there, and if he's a piece you can add into this mixture of young players that you're hopefully trying to build around and take that next step with.
Love it.
Many clubs this week have had their pro scouting meetings.
Yeah.
And, of course, what comes out of those is a strategy on what it looks like going into trade deadline. Earlier this week, I wrote an article for the Toronto Star. In it, I mentioned there's still as many as 20 teams that have aspirations on not only still thinking that they can make the playoffs, but maybe winning a round or two.
Well, I got to tell you, I read your article. And you wrote, you know, there's as many 20 as 20 teams think they can make the playoffs. And I thought, I think you're light. I think
I was conservative.
Yeah.
22, 23.
I mean, you get 8-8 in each division that are in. You're at 16. There's at least, I don't know, 4 or 5 on the outside looking in the West that think they can get in.
One of them played last night. We watched the Toronto Maple Leafs beat the Calgary Flames. And, you know, thanks to a horrific run by the LA Kings, the Calgary Flames sit today 3 points behind them, albeit they've got 3 more games played than LA, but
half a season to make that up.
Not shouldn't be an issue if you feel like you can push forward. First of all, I mean, we spent our first hour on our Leaf Edition talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, but we never really We never spoke of the Calgary Flames and what we saw last night. And I got to be honest with you guys, I was not impressed. And I know they've played some good hockey and they've had some good goaltending. Even Vladar last night held them in it. He gave them a chance to tie the game.
I was surprised by your texting last night.
But I
you did not like the Flames.
No, did not like them. You know, in terms of now watching them give everything they have and still falling a little short, and I get it. Like the Colemans, Mangiapane to me was their best player last night.
Yeah.
But he really shouldn't be their best player last night. That should belong to Jonathan Huberdeau. It should belong to Lindholm.
Like Huberdeau?
Not even in the least.
Oh.
Not even in the least. Like, I saw a guy that didn't necessarily hunt down pucks. I didn't see crisp passing. I don't see a guy driving hard to the net. I didn't see him pull anybody in to make a pass. Mm-hmm. Like, he is... For last night, I thought Huberdeau really struggled, and I think there's been a lot of games like that. I just I'm not watching as much as say Eric Francis or some of our other great analysts out there. But I mean, I saw a team that I don't know how hard you want to push, thinking you're getting in while you hold on to assets.
Watching the game, I kind of felt like the bottom six was more entertaining and just. They're more engaged than the top six guys.
Yeah, listen, I like it's weird.
Zari
like,
there.
Zari.
Yeah.
Sharon Govich.
There's a future there. There's a future there. 100%.
But, like, they were more tantalizing than some of the guys that you're supposed to be getting the production
but
from.
I didn't see any push from Lindholm. I didn't see game breaker. Lindholm's I didn't see really a guy leading necessarily. I just saw a guy that's just in the mix.
I would say a bigger concern is, let's say they decide, okay, we're not quite it. We are going to sell. Is Chris Tanev didn't particularly sparkle.
No,
you know, like he didn't. You didn't go. God, if we had that guy, you know. So it's.
I just don't know what teams can pay Calgary if you don't think for sure he's signing with you. Mm-hmm. And we've had this conversation the other day, but like, Leafs can't give up a first rounder for him
if they know he's signing. If they know he's signing,
Know he's signing and you really feel like you could win with him in the next 2 years or 3 years, and I would imagine he can get no problem on the open market this summer. He can get a 3-year deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I imagine if you're the Leafs, you're thinking we're picking after 20, you know, quite likely if you trade for Tanev and things go well. So do you want to trade the 24th overall pick? And then sign him for 3 times, like give him Brody's contract, somewhere around there, 3 times 3, 4.
I think he can get
3, 4, 5.
I think you're in the high 4s, 5s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How attractive is that? I don't know. I would also say, you know, from Calgary's perspective, I wonder what is the cutoff to say, you know what, we should probably just let's focus on what's next.
Yeah.
Like, let's look ahead. And the guys that we have here, the veteran pieces, Huberdeau, you can't move because the contract is just an onerous. It's hard. It's difficult. That's the problem with that. And he has to play well enough to even make it remotely appetizing to have somebody take money off of that when you do trade it away. So then what's the point, though, when, like, a Lindholm, right? Do they just move him? Because they're essentially committed to walking him out the door, if that, right? So what is that cutoff for them? To determine, hey, we should probably just be sellers and figure out what's
next. Lose another 4 or 5, or Kings get hot, or whatever.
Because they're 3 points technically out of a wild card spot. They're right there, I guess. Right, they're kind of on the periphery.
Listen, in my next life, I'm coming back a defenseman.
Mm.
They are so few and short.
Yeah,
and that's why even a guy like Hanifin can turn around and say, "I want 8 years, and I want 7, 7.5."
Yeah, and he'll probably get it.
And we will never mention Hanifin in any Norris conversation.
No, he'll just be...
But that's just the going rate for 20 minutes. And Chychrun's not that far off from that conversation, guys. And now we're starting to hear more and more. And I mentioned his name a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
That, like, where does Ottawa think they're going with being in the position that they're in? And thinking about signing Jacob Chychrun to $7.5 million. Like,
yeah, Sanderson, given the money they're giving out to D
and
Shabbat already.
And you're gonna sign Chychrun too? Like, it makes no sense.
Tough to see, Kip, for sure.
It felt like with Ottawa too, if you look at the build and the stages of their build, the moves that they had made like 2 years ago with Pierre Dorion in charge, felt like that was them indicating, okay, we got to take this step, but it hasn't happened.
Oh, for sure.
And those guys, right? Like, and those
Claude
guys
Giroux
are not,
and Tarasenko, and
they're not there yet.
Yeah, the big goalie moves.
And the money's been invested in a lot of different pieces there. It's hard for them to now pivot to what the actual next step is, the proper step to get into that, even that playoff conversation. Yeah. Never mind anything further than that, but just playoffs.
Yep. Should we do text you?
Yeah, you know
else?
What? One more thought. I know I mentioned the LA Kings yesterday. I think Rob Blake met with the media and gave his head coach, Todd McClellan, a vote of confidence. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, that they are so lucky being out west in that market where, like, imagine if that team was in Canada right now, the heat that they would be taking.
It's
day to day.
I know.
Dropping 10 of 11.
Huge trade to get Pierre-Luc Dubois. Philippe Deneau had signed a big contract. Fiala was, you know, a nice ad. Kopitar, Byfield, Kempe. I mean, they've made moves there, and I like their back end. Gavrikov was another big contract they gave us. My point is, there are expectations to succeed when the rebuild's over. You're a team now. You're trying to win, and you're right. So I wrote a little bit about coaches today, and McClellan was one of them where I don't really know, you know, it's tough to say like, hey, this guy's the issue or whatever, because their top end talent is not that high. But I don't know. It's the seat's got to be warming up a little bit.
But it's just funny because here we were talking about, either Brad Treliving or Brendan Shanahan coming out, maybe calming the waters on Sheldon Keefe. We don't hear a word. The media out there, and I don't know, it could have been one or two people who follow the Kings, goes, hey, what about Todd McClellan, your head coach? Would you ever move on from him? Oh, no, not at all. And then it's over.
Yeah.
It's just over.
Came out and handled it. That's nice.
All right, Disco, what do you have for us? Let's get the overall feel, the vibe of No Sammy and All Disco.
Well, first things first, we had somebody say, oh, what about the Edmonton Oilers? They won 12 in a row. Yes, the Edmonton
Oilers.
We're
tired of talking about
how they exist. Yeah.
Good job. 12 in a row. Okay, keep rolling.
Can I just say one thing on that streak? Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now it's regarded as the longest winning streak ever.
Ever for a Canadian team. Right?
Yeah. And I think they passed the Montreal Canadiens at 68.
Yeah.
But this, like, there was no 3-on-3. There's no overtime. How many in that streak, how many overtime games?
1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Maybe 4.
Is that really fair to call them now? Can we not just say it? As is, this is the longest winning streak ever in the salary cap era. Can we just not say that?
In the modern day 32 teams.
That's a good point. Why does a 67 or 68 Montreal Canadian team get bumped off on that?
Are you new to this business?
No.
You got to do the whole hyperbole thing. They're the greatest team.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Are you not the guy that said, I don't know who tweeted it out, that the Leafs were on a 4-game losing streak?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, somebody else said, no, it's a 4-game winless streak. And you're like, that's garbage. It's the losing streak.
Probably. Sounds familiar. Yeah, I don't even believe what I'm selling here, Kip. I know the 67 Canadians are better, you know, the all-time great teams.
It should be over. If you want to be known as a team that has won 12 games in a row.
Yeah, win 12 games.
You got to win 12 in 60 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how you pass the 67 Montreal Canadiens.
We can also qualify it because they do it in other sports where it's like before or after the merger or whatever.
Yeah.
Or to your point, Kipper, salary cap era. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with
football,
that.
Football, it's Super Bowl era. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because football's been played for hundreds and hundreds of years. Right. Just like it's totally
you
fine.
You flush 80 years down the toilet when you start tagging everything salary cap era, but don't worry about it.
Some poor guy wanted us to talk Oilers, and we were just like, nah.
we're
nothing to do with your record.
All right, let's go.
Put a damper on. All right, so
We do have, I'm actually, I got to say, I'm pleased. Thank you for all the positivity in the text line. Disco Dan, way better than Sammy McKee. He's a real pro. no name on that one, but thank you.
You know, we love Sammy's unproneness as well, but there's no doubt that this is a thoroughly prepared individual here.
No, this show is just really about being unpolished.
That's all we have. Hope you like the lack of polish.
We got that in spades. There was another one in here saying Disco Dan equals 10 out of 10. So thank you. I appreciate that.
That's awesome.
And no other Sammy bashing happening. There was somebody saying, I thought Sammy said he doesn't gamble. Once he left his seat open, Danny jumped in and gambled his job away.
Yes, and he gambled his whole career on one day off in Vegas.
You and Sammy gambled the moment you agreed to do a show with me.
No doubt about that, man. There's no doubt. But, you know, I hope that Sammy he's in Vegas. He's watching the Golden Knights game tomorrow, I believe. I hope he's, you know, having some day drinks somewhere, playing some hands of blackjack. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hope he's enjoying his day because he's getting killed here.
Big Saturday matchup, the Vancouver Canucks and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. You give the Leafs any shot at winning?
Yeah, you know how I feel about this Leafs team. Whenever it's a weird game, you think they're going to get smoked, they show up.
Did you do a stat on Leafs bouncing back off of 3 or 4 game losing streaks? And the record is phenomenal.
So for the record, I didn't. But last night on Hockey Central, I did tweet it.
Yes.
And I owe credit, and I can find wherever the credit is to someone else here, Joseph Zita, who did this. But yes, the last 4 years under Sheldon Keefe, they have bounced back from four-game winless streaks. 15-2-1, 15-1-4, 8-2-4, like killer after losing 4 in a row.
It is pretty impressive.
So
it is pretty impressive.
I'm not going to say they can't be decent here.
But earlier in the week, we had Nazem Kadri on, and he all but admitted that there's winning, and then there's winning against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I got to think, for all the success that the Vancouver Canucks have had, they're going to want this one really bad. Yeah. For no other reason that we're the top team in the league, and we still have to start 4 p.m. local.
I
don't always be a discussion point.
I can't believe that still happens. I mean, I'm grateful it does.
Ain't us.
I don't want to watch a 10 p.m. game, so that's great, but it's pretty crazy. You know why it's crazy, too? Because they play at 10:30 here when they're in San Jose.
That's true. Yeah, Anaheim,
we're
LA Kings.
Starting at 10 there.
ESPN primetime down in the States, we're at 10 o'clock with the Kings. It happens.
Oh, what a comment I just got. Disco Dan is our Martin Jones. He saved the season of Real Kemper.
That's even better than Holmberg. That's better than Pontus.
I kind of like Pontus, though. It's got a special place in my heart. Pontus always has a special place.
There you go.
He's one of the your guys on this show, Kemper.
He is.
Now, the other thing I noticed is you've been wearing a Bills hat all week, and you didn't bring it on the show.
I mean,
that's okay. We want to see your face.
I told him to wear a tux today, so this is, just no Bills hat was showing up.
Do you own a tux?
Not a full blown tux. I have suits, obviously. But
okay, well,
do you own a tux?
Think about it. Yeah, I've got a tux.
Yeah, of course. They're not cheap.
No.
I got a guy.
You got a guy?
We got a guy.
I'm coming.
That we can talk about. But no. Big one for my Bills this weekend, Kipper.
What do you think?
One.
They got a shot against Taylor Swift?
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see. Here's what I will say. Measure of true love is if Taylor Swift makes the journey to Western New York, that'll tell you that.
You show up in Buffalo in January, that's commitment.
With a shovel. Nothing behind the glass.
Yeah.
You got to get out there.
Shovel to the seat.
That's right. That was incredible, by the way.
Buffalo, love you. Truly.
Bills Mafia's the best.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, great job.
Thanks.
Today.
Yeah, good work.
Thanks.
A lot of fun working with you. Well, welcome back, Sammy, under any circumstances. Even a crappy lineup sheet.
Yeah, we love him. Give him some tutoring on it.
Okay, our thanks to Carter Hutton in the first hour, and then Ian McIntyre giving us wall-to-wall coverage on the Vancouver Canucks. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Give us a rating and review if you get a chance. We'd love to hear from you. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Disco Dan, Franceschi, signing out.